Thanks very much for the introduction, John. And also, on behalf of the Department of Services Technology Administration, I'd like to apologise to Catherine for the projector going off, and I'm sure at some point it'll go off for me too, so it's okay. Thanks very much. Basically, the Department of Services Technology Administration, we ran a self-paced, computer-based training course in December 2010. And Amanda Barber from State Records heard about it and just asked me to present a few, give you an overview of what we did, why we did it, and so forth. The questions that Amanda asked me to address are why we developed the module, what we were trying to do, what we're trying to cover in each module, how did we deploy it, how did we promote it, and did we actually meet our aims? And in order to understand that, I do need to explain a little bit of detail about who the Department of Services Technology Administration is, where we're up to in our records management program. We did things in a particular way because of where we're up to in our records management program, and it may not be suitable for other organisations, so that's a quite important thing to note. Okay, the SDA is a super agency, or if you prefer, a
super agency.
Made up of a number of very diverse businesses and ex-organisations. A good way of thinking of this is that we're a product of amalgamations of amalgamations. So we do a lot of very, very wide, diverse activities, some of which are traditional public service activities, centrally funded, some of which are self-funding. So there's a whole range of all sorts of higgledy-piggledy functions. So it's an important thing to note about us. In terms of records management, we've never, ever fully integrated all our existing systems from all the other agencies. So we don't have a consistent records management model. We definitely don't have one records management system. So we don't have one set of practices or procedures. Okay. Now, we wanted to address this via a major electronic document and records management program. It was put on hold because of shared services and corporate service reform. So basically, at that point, we thought, oh, okay, so what can we do? I went and saw my boss and said, I've got a proposed series of work of how we can go forward without the technology of an EDRMS, basically based on a continuation of the business analysis and the records classification that I think Tony Leviston spoke about, I don't know how many times, maybe about three or four, forums ago, to use that work to try and work within our current technology with a new classification scheme as a basis for driving a consistent model throughout the organisation. And at the end of that, we would have training in the classification scheme and the new model. So I went and saw my boss about that, and my boss said, very good, but no. What you got to do first is the training. Okay, so why do we do it in that order? Okay, firstly, there was an audit report not into records management, but a peripheral recommendation in there was that all staff needed to have records management training by December 2010. Okay. So we thought, yep, that's fine. I mean, that's good. So what we decided to do in that case, because we have diverse systems, because we have diverse practices, what we can do is have basic awareness-raising training. So what we couldn't do is, so we could train people in what they had to do, but what we couldn't do is train them in how they had to do it, because there was no one how. Okay, so you'd have two options then, just to have customized training for every single instances of how people did it, or to have, as I said, a generic sort of training about their records keeping responsibilities and so forth, and then point off to elsewhere, i.e. intranet content, for specific instructions as to how they would meet their responsibilities. Okay. It's a bit risky. I've never liked training people in what they have to do without training them how they have to do it, but there was good reason for doing it in this case. I was like, yep, yeah, fair enough. And also, it's a good excuse. Our records management program had not really affected all staff up until this point. It was mainly sort of fiddling around the edges. And it was a good opportunity for us to sort of above board. Okay. And also we had a whole range of new policies that we needed to discuss. Okay, so delivery methods. At this point we have to think, how are we going to deliver to all staff of the organisation? We have round about our staff and contractor numbers go up and down a bit. At its highest point, around about 4,000 staff and contractors. And as an aside, we made sure that we did cover contractors as well as staff. And we're in around about 80 locations around the state. Now, what is immediately obvious to us too, by the way, the one thing I neglected to say is that we kicked this project off in August. In fact, August was when we first found out that we needed to do this, and we had to deliver by December 2010. So we had a strict deadline, not a lot of time. There was absolutely no way we could do face-to-face for all our staff without spending a significant amount of money. So we decided to go down the self-paced learning, the computer-based training path. Okay. It was also the least disruptive to our staff in that, for example, whole sections or half of sections didn't have to go offline at the same time. Staff could do it at their own pace. It was the cheapest way of doing it, and it's the most realistic way of us reaching our deadline. Another piece of important piece of background is that we followed another self-paced training program in OHS. Okay. Now, whatever you do, please don't share this with anyone else in DSTA. Do I have your promise? Okay.
But it was really boring.
Okay. So it was compliance oriented. Lots of text. Not much in the way of graphics. And informal feedback from staff was that they didn't like it. Just as an aside, DSTA is a super agency, also covers state records. How many state records people did the OHS compliance? Good, good.
Everybody.
And how many people thought it was really dull and boring? Okay, I'll accept you, John. You don't have to put your hand up. That's fine. Okay, so that's also a bit of the background. So traditionally staff, we have an image problem in records management. People think we are a bit dull, okay? On the back of that, we're going off a really dull training course. So, where's this leading? We just had to make things interesting for people. I had to have an incentive to do it. Okay. Okay. So we had a proper project plan and so forth. And this is just a highlight of some of the risks that we identified. The first one is that staff don't do the training because they perceive it to be boring. Another one was a delay in the content approval processes. And another one, which is the one I was quite worried about, is that the training might raise expectations that get dashed when people come back and actually interact with our manual, not necessarily very friendly or streamlined processes when they came back. Okay. Now, actually, one of these risks was realised. I'm going to number them 1, 2 and 3, and I'd like a show of hands for those people who think that risk 1 was realised. Okay. Risk 2. Okay. And risk 3. Okay. Excellent. And actually, it was 2. So one of the important lessons in that is, depending on the nature of your organisation, you need to allow a lot of time for the content approval process. That will differ from organisation to organisation, but that's just a tip from our experience. Okay. So we thought, what performance measures are we going to have? We had a set of official and unofficial criteria. Our official criteria was that 50% of all staff do the training. Now, that might seem to be low to you, but one of the lessons we learned from Occupational Health and Safety was they were going for 100% compliance. As a result of the fact that they were going for 100% compliance, they first delivered the training around about 18 months ago and then sent follow-up messages to people who hadn't done it. They're still doing it now. Okay. So they just thought, do we really want to get into that thing? We sort of thought, no. We did also want 70% of business unit managers to do the training, because the training was also supporting new policies with a lot of new responsibilities on business unit managers. So that was our performance measures. Our unofficial things was we were going to monitor our client requests, to look for an increase in client requests, and we'd also look at traditional measures about file creation. Did the number of files created being increased during this period? Okay. So what did the training cover? What content did it cover? In yellow, we have the names of the particular modules. The first module was pretty much about what is a record and what do you need to record. So it was about awareness raising about what business activities that you carry out that actually need to be recorded, how to, things like handling drafts, what do you do with drafts, what do you do with emails, etc., etc. So that's the guts of it, that's the core of it. The next section was about overrunning the important parts of the policy. The next section on information integrity basically was about sharing and security, information sharing and security. And information flow, the last thing, was just describing how information flowed throughout our organisation. The only sort of, what's the word, I'd say anything radical or innovative content we had in there is we did talk a lot about people's business systems and the fact that these rules also apply to business systems. So not only do you have to encourage people to use traditional documents like Metro File Note, it's also saying if you're carrying out a business function and there's a business system, you've got to use the business system. It might seem to be incredibly obvious to say that, but we still thought it was worthwhile acknowledging that. And it was done in such a way that it was presented as being such a natural thing that you wouldn't even have to think about it. And I think that's the way it was taken by the staff. A note about content. The content itself was delivered by a gentleman by the name of Kevin Walton, who's at the back of the thing. Hello, Kevin. Okay. Kevin doesn't have a records management background. Kevin's a content developer. Kevin's background is actually, apart from content development, is project management. And one of the interesting things that came up was when the first draft of some of the content came back to us, I looked at it and I thought, I wouldn't say that way. And then I thought, yeah, but it's okay. And one of the messages I'd like to get across to you is that as records managers, we can often be a bit ideological and didactic. The content I was getting back from Kevin was even more from the perspective of a user than you know anything I could have done. So it was like, did it get across what I wanted to get across? Yes. Was it using the language? Or? That's fine. That's okay. Okay. Was it using the language that I would have used? No, not really. But that's fine. That just meant that the communication was relevant to what I wanted to do. Okay. Now I'm going to fill around with this for a minute, so I'm going to pause my speech at this point. But I'm also going to take the opportunity to mention something completely irrelevant. Some of you will be aware of the fact that for a long time, Stans Australia has been working on a handbook on records classification. That handbook on records classification has been released last Friday and is available from the Stans Australia website. It hasn't had a hard launch yet, but you can go there and have a look at that. It's a handbook, it's a voluntary standard by the way, and it deals with a lot of the issues that we've had around with functional classification, classification systems and so forth. Okay, I'm still pandering from time. I don't know how to do that. It's alright, don't worry about it. Any questions about anything I've had to say so far? That's a good one. Go on, ask a question. Okay, how many of you have got computer-based training courses for your agency? That's not bad. Okay, Cassie's asked me how many people have access to state records
modules. State records e-learning.
The state records e-learning modules, yes. Come on, get up and talk. There should be a short pause and we'll be up again running. Okay. So, in terms of, is any of this sound, for those people who put their hands up, is any of this sounding familiar about the environment where we were in, or were you in a much different environment?
Yeah,
Okay, who put your hand up again? Put them up again. No, hands went up. Ah, yes. Yes. Yes.
What we've done with our regular scheme is they have a package. Mm-hmm. They didn't convert it to a three-day order. And we're basically the next 300 people to start and work the system.
Okay. Well,
they're giving you a package.
Sure. Okay, so you're lucky. Do you know why you're lucky? You have a record system. We don't have a record system. We have many record systems. But anyway, so yeah. And so the training, the other important point out, the training was very different than if we had one record system to train within. So we only had to keep to general principles. I think that's pretty much all I want to say about the content. Okay. So in terms of promoting the course, how do we promote the course? Okay, so at the SDA we have a monthly intranet newsletter. That's it's not a records newsletter, it's the DSTA newsletter, so we got in that. We had a poster campaign the week before, and on the actual launch, all staff had an email that linked them to the training course. Okay, and all these forms of communications, our subliminal message was, this isn't as boring as OHS was. Okay. Right. So how did we go? We went mixed. Okay. 53% of staff completed the training. Yay. Okay, so that's really good. That means that the silly way of thinking about it is either every staff member did it or was sitting next to someone who did it. Great. Really happy about that. Okay. Okay, now the downside. We were going for 70% of business unit managers. 37% of business unit managers did it. Oh dear, never mind. Okay. In terms of the unofficial performance measures, our inquiries were stable. Again, a sort of a bad news, because we were expecting a lot of people to actually be motivated to contact us to ask questions about how they were doing, what they needed to do, how they were going to do it, what sorts of things they need to record it. But our inquiries were very stable. On the good side, in areas that traditionally had a bad record-keeping culture, we noticed that their file creations went up 30% on the same time last year. So that's a good one. So another way of looking at it was there's good points and bad points. Okay. So what was the feedback from the members of the staff? We had formal feedback and informal feedback. The formal feedback, they had a 7-point scoring system, one being, this is the worst training course I've ever done in my entire life, and 7 is, oh, isn't this wonderful? We rated around about a 5, which is pretty good. It's not bad. I've heard people say things like, there's a bit of a halo effect that people add on an extra point, just out of, I don't know, sympathy or whatever. and so, but even at that case, more people liked it than didn't like it, so we're still above the curve there. We had excellent email reactions. Only 4 complaints. Out of 2,000 people did the course, only 4 people complained via email, which is pretty amazing from our perspective. And we have received many, many more positive emails. And the message tended to be, it was better than I thought it was going to be, which is great. Perfect. Many sort of positive comments in the lift. We had a few mildly quirky things in there, but nothing too weird. Things like, don't eat beetroot sandwiches over sensitive files and things like that. And that one, that struck in, it was mildly absurd and struck in people's minds. So now the feedback's really good. Okay, and the last thing I'll talk about is we developed in-house. So we had the option of outsourcing. We decided not to do it. And also here I talk about how much it actually cost and how much time it took. It took us around about 3 months from go to work. So that included all the project planning, the content development, content approval, content loading, linking to our organization's learning management system, doing the testing, around about 3 months. Okay. It cost $93,000. Okay, you may think, ooh, that sounds like a lot. The overwhelming majority of that was staff time. We had about $2,000 worth of costs in filming, so we did some filming, and I'll show you some extracts of the films a bit later. So it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not really when you think about it. So what would it have cost if we outsourced it? We still think we would have had to spend around about $45,000 worth of staff time in putting the input to the content developers to go and develop the content. And based on some figures I've got from another organisation, they spent around about $23,000 to the outsourced provider. They didn't cost their staff input, by the way, but $23,000 to an outsourced provider. So, you know, if we outsourced, we probably would have saved around about $20,000 or so. Okay, but we're happy with what we did because we believe that it was worth that extra time and effort to make that content engaging to our staff and specific to our staff. All the examples were DSDA examples. All the content was relevant to an organisation at our level of development and maturity, which is not what we would have got if we outsourced it. Okay. So, let's, technology committee, have a bit of a look at some of the content, if that's okay. Okay, I'll play some of these films first. Okay. Now, in terms of, as I said, one of the important things was to make the content specific to our organisation. And what we did is we looked for an example within our organisation where records and record keeping was useful. This is an engineer by the name of Vijay Bhargava, and he's got this story to tell. Hopefully you can hear it.
When we reached the city, the city was absolutely dead because nearly half of it was closed by security tapes, etc. So we had to have the police escorts to take us inside those closed streets. At times, they would say there was a lot of damage to these buildings. It was very fortunate that it happened on the 28th of December when the college was closed. In some of the buildings like Chandler Building, there was an internal courtyard and the whole parapet said fallen inwards. Imagine if there were students sitting during the lunchtime or something, then there could have been a lot of injuries, etc. With the plans, initially we used them for site markups. That wherever the damage was, we could mark it up on the plan. And then the plans are always helpful to especially structural engineers because a lot of things are hidden inside concrete. For example, we had to know the reinforcement inside a beamer column. A plan was helpful. What was below a ceiling, the plans were helpful. It was again in Tizer's tape that there was a block, the Marston building or electrical trades. And one of the columns, it was damaged. And what the damage did, it exposed a can of coke, which was buried inside the concrete. It must have been thrown by one of the workers in there.
Okay, so the background to that, which I neglected to tell you before showing the film, was Newcastle earthquake. And at the time of the Newcastle earthquake, we were involved in the recovery process. And before setting off, the engineers took a lot of plans of government buildings that we had and stored to take with them to look at the recovery effort and also the effort to understand which buildings needed to be destroyed and so forth. And so people don't think about that sort of use of records. We liked it because it was a nice little. It's an extreme example of the use of records. So that was quite good. I'll show you a couple of other films quickly. The background to this one was we asked staff, this was in the manager's, business unit manager's training, and we painted a picture. Okay, so just imagine that you are a business unit manager and you rise up through the ranks. And you eventually go federal and you're head of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Okay, you give a triumphant national press club speech and you get a question. Now, is this the question you would expect to get? Okay, this one's a bit quiet, so I've got to apologise for that.
Not medical. Edward from Sydney Morning Herald, Doctor. You referred to a public servant in your speech. I presume it was Andrew Podger, who last year when he retired gave an address at his retirement in which he expressed concerns about the skeletal record keeping involving sensitive issues, and dealt with also responsive public servants being over-responsive to their government masters. Are you saying that there hasn't been any modification in terms of transparency, record keeping, public right to know issues in recent years than the Civil Two Coast?
Yes. Okay. So later on in the training module, we actually gave his answer, which is actually a really good answer. It mentions the dreaded A word, the word that us as records managers don't like very much, but that's okay.
From my perspective, as I hope I suggested, that effective record keeping and management and archiving is simple to do with what public servants do. It is the way we keep our record of how decisions got made and what were the decisions about their implementation and what was the authority upon which decisions got made.
Which is a really good answer, by the way. So anyway, those were a couple of... So we made sure we had a little bit of interactive content in there. Okay, now that's my speech. And this is what it actually looked like, I think. Yeah, here we go. So these were the various modules. So you'd get an overview of what was in each one, a little bit of information. I'll just flick through it at a quick rate. Things like, okay, here's some nice definitions. There we go. That's the VJ film that we talked about before. That's again the other film we just showed. Lots of lovely pictures, lots of clicking, people keeping their fingers busy so they don't fall asleep while they're reading it. You know, that sort of stuff. It goes on and on and on. And I'd like you to bear in mind what I said earlier in the sense that some of the content's not necessarily what a records manager would write, but it's very much... But the context is very much what an end user would actually perceive the messages that we had. Now, we might try, if we possibly can, bundling this content up and putting it on the IAMS website. That's that collaborative government spacey type thing. We're just not entirely sure what the formats are. And if anyone wants to reuse any of the content, that's fine. You know, just get in contact us with us. That's perfectly okay. Okay, so are there any questions?
We have a lot of e-learning courses. The bulk of them tend to go along the lines of quick start, paragraphs, blah, blah, blah. Select A, B, C, D, next, quick, etc. You might as well just randomly answer them and doze off while you're waiting for the process. Okay, you've included short film clips to keep their attention.
Yep.
Buttons, etc., to sort of keep them active and so on.
Yep.
Is there anything else, any other recommendations you would have from this experience to suggest to e-learning developers in terms of how do you keep them awake from the process?
Sure. Okay, Kevin, do you want to come up and have a chat? You don't have to if you don't want to. This is Kevin, as I said before, our content developer.
I can talk loudly. Well, yes, there are a few kind of key things that you probably want to consider. And the first one is, the more time people are spent just passively clicking next, 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 the less engaged they're going to be. I think a lot of the times where people fall down with e-learning is because they think it's a PowerPoint presentation. Mm-hmm. And when Steve was doing his PowerPoint presentation, he can talk to you and ask you questions and get you engaged. You don't have that luxury when you're doing e-learning. So you need to add in all the little bits and different mediums as well, because people learn in different ways. So adding videos, adding some text, adding some quizzes and puzzles, just to keep them going. And try and keep it as plain text as you can. Plain English as you can, sorry. Which is what we tried to do here, really. This was just a way to affect change and to push people to the internet, which has all the backup content and all the technical stuff, but we needed to get those messages through. What we wanted them to do was go, oh, what was that thing again? Oh, I know where I can find it. It's on the internet, so have that kind of backup in place as well, because once they've gone from here, they're gone, and you've lost them. They're not going to remember everything that you put in here. You need to find ways to get that message across as well. And if you can do bits that are a bit more kind of a blended approach, where you have a bit more human interaction as well, that they'll get that benefit from there. Any other questions? Hello.
My question is talking about your intent to do the content you've got now internally at the end of that, regarding the induction and module.
It will be included as part of the induction. There'll be a bit added into the orientation day, which we just discussed yesterday, so I don't really know the extent of that, but it's basically going to be putting this into context. Obviously, as Stephen said, we haven't done the step one, step two, step three of the actual processes people are doing. This is the kind of context behind that and the principles behind it. So it's really to make them aware that they have to know all of this. And then in their local area, they'll have the hands-on training as to how to implement it. So these will be available as part of the ongoing induction process. But the plans kind of moving forward is to kind of take the snippets out and then add them onto the relevant intranet pages. And with the intranet, we try to kind of marry them up so that it reflects the training, so it's familiar with what they've already experienced. Okay. There was somebody else? Hello.
How long did it take the average staff member to complete the modules, and was the impact on the reason why the manager's response was so low, because it took so long to complete the modules?
What to say about that?
I'll do that.
Well, I'll do the all staff one if you like.
Yeah, you do
the all one. The all staff one, which was the better uptake, probably averaged at about 40-45 minutes. We were a bit conservative on that and told them it would take them an hour, thinking they'd end up, oh, that was much better.
Yeah. And on a similar thing, we said that the manager's one would take an hour and a half to do. It actually took probably around about 50 minutes to an hour. So we don't think that was it. Maybe it's always a delicate thing whether you over-promise or under-promise. So we took the under-promise approach. It was also unfortunate at the time of year that we did it. Because we had that December deadline, the course went live on the 8th of December. Now, not many people would have been on holidays, but virtually everyone was rushing to get things done before they went on holidays, which was the other problem that we had. And it might come down to other issues, such as that managers perceive that records is what something else, what my staff do, not what I do. It might have just come down to the more stress that there are on the managers, we don't know. We're going to be more aggressively following up the managers than we are the all staff, because we had such a low turnout with the results.
Very important mandatory training?
Pardon?
Very important
maintenance
mandatory training.
Okay, well, it is mandatory training. But there's mandatory training and there's mandatory training. The clear approach that we took because of a number of factors, including the fact that the OHS training also had a lot of negative feedback because it was so mandatory, and it got down to people who reported to their supervisor whether they had or hadn't done the training. Now, a lot of the data about who supervised who that was based on was wrong, which caused a lot of angst. Okay, so we sat down and we thought, okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to hit hard or do we want to hit soft? We decided to hit soft because we did not want to have negative feelings about the training. So we thought it was more important to have
to get a lot of staff members to do it and feel good about it than all staff members to do it and feel bad about it. So that's not necessarily what I'd suggest in all organisations. It is just the context that we were in at that time.
Sorry, one more.
Yeah, sure.
Did you do any breakdown of the completion rate of regional versus metropolitan?
No, but we had those figures. We haven't done a lot of analysis about that at this stage. Yeah, no, I haven't. And that would be something interesting to check. Yeah.
With our e-learning courses, we generally feel that a lot in doing them and can be expected to do, if you have done them, is the level of actual knowledge picked up from them is not. It tends to be quick, I might pick up something here and there, but
sure.
Actual impact factor.
Yeah.
Do, pun intended, with a big ocean type response. Not so much from a statistics point of view, but from your observation and general staff assessment, what was the difference in how they picked up and actually understood and applied what they were doing?
Well, I mean, we only do have to have the statistics to go on, but there was some encouraging signs. Even though only 37% of business unit managers did it, we had a couple of approaches from business managers to say, okay, you need to come and give us a hand, we're in a bit of a mess. So that's nice and positive. Probably not as much as we were expecting, so it's, as I said earlier, our results were sort of, you know, good and bad. So there was a bit of that, and I think one of the things that I should have emphasised, and thanks for that, Kevin, is there were two key messages. One is you need to document your business. Two is, here's an email address to get more information, and here's the internet site to get more information. That's the, you know, we took 45 minutes to get that across, but that's okay, you know. You don't put too much in, and anything else that was picked up was icing on the cake. Yeah. Peter?
What if you ask them for a response after that news, and you said, would you like us to contact you in the next month, or something like that, and they click that?
You can do that.
You just have this, you know, here the contact, you don't follow it up.
Yep.
We would like to contact. Would you like us to contact? And then that's it, yes to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, those things you can see where you say you want to receive.
Yeah. Excellent idea that we didn't do.
I noticed the order there says, ask you to find services for help. One of the issues, of course, with things for training is if you don't rely on simple sort of heads up, probably not very best from it. That raises the question, is the AFL not quite so 9,000 search markets?
Not as an entire organisation, I don't think. I think bits are and bits aren't.
The reason I ask that is that if you're an ISO 9000
certified organisation, I've already managed. Oh, hang on, oops, I got mixed up. Sorry, I was commenting on 7799. No, they're not at 1900.
Some government agencies are.
Yes.
You have to have a sort of business document system.
Yes.
And you have to have everything documented, which is appropriate. And that, of course, gives you a business document library, which is accessible to all people in the media. So you don't have to say us, ring someone up. You say, you can say, you know, these are the organisation's approved policies and procedures and instructions, but how you go about this. So basically you can use this sort of stuff to draw attention to what is available elsewhere, probably online anyway, because we've got and it's all part of that package.
Yes. I got confused. I thought you meant 7799. I was losing track of my ISOs.
7799
is replaced in the first place. See, look. What else do you want to know? Yes, you're right. Our document library, if you want to say, that is the intranet for that purposes. My boss wants to ask a question. What do you want to ask, Malcolm?
Public works within this time.
Yeah. Thank you. No, sorry.
I just wondered what kind of techniques you use for editing software.
Pardon?
What kind of techniques you use for teaching software?
We talked about some of those. Let's try and sum it up. And if I missed something, do you want to go, Kevin? Yeah, go first.
Yeah. It was a bit of a tightrope, I think it's probably fair to say, because it was a mandatory training course. Sorry, can you hear me?
That's not the microphone, that's the...
Obviously not as loudmouthed as I think I am. it was a bit of a tightrope, I think, between, obviously with the history with the OH&S training and it being a mandatory course and us wanting people to want to do it, if anyone wants to do record training. So I think we spent a lot of time trying to find the balance of coaxing and telling people that they do have to do this, and I think we did that to varying successes.
Yeah. So in terms of actual techniques, our follow-ups were not aggressive. Our follow-ups were not to the supervisors of the staff that hadn't done it. They were directly to the staff that had done it. Interestingly, too, we had a number of technical problems early on in the piece. But what was really good was we got reports on those users that were having technical problems. We rang them up. They almost died of shock. It was like, oh my god, someone's ringing me up and, you know, give me a hand. This is amazing. So it's all that sort of things. It was in the content, it was in the way the content was seen. It was written very little in terms of compliance, but a bit on the consequences of not compliance, but not so much on the compliance thing. I would have to go through, I think, I don't even know if we mentioned the State Records Act once. We may have, I think, but not definitely not more than once. So that was the tone, old tone was light, helpful, all that sort of stuff. So that was off the top of my head, that's the technique. If we can get this in a form up on the IANS website, then you can go through and look at yourself at your own leisure. Okay.